trebuie mă face, de trebuie că mine stau diferența de care le tare.
Good afternoon, I'm Magdalena Martinez, the director of Energy with Shkachakli.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Mabel Ranica. I'm the deputy director general in the Department of Military Veterans, responsible for the branch socioeconomic support services.
Good afternoon, honourable members. I'm Bernard Jacobs. I'm the acting deputy director general for empowerment, stakeholders, and management.
Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Feeney, chief director in heritage and retirement life.
Good afternoon. I'm Tolisa Murolo, chief director healthcare and wellness in the branch of the social economic services.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm Nani Panzaluba, responsible for strategic support, wherein you have IT, you have IT, you have legal, and you have strategic planning and monitoring and evaluation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Colin Richardi, Chief Director of Beneficiary Support Center. Thank you.
Moses Rampele, responsible for planning.
Honorable members, good afternoon. I'm Diapo Matore, Director of Research and Policy.
Good afternoon. I'm Lebogang Tindisa, DD Finance.
Honorable members, good afternoon. My name is Lydia Miso, the Chief Audit Executive, GMV.
Afternoon. My name is Mangaliso Konza. I'm the Media and Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Deputy Minister.
Good afternoon. My name is Hilton Klein. I'm the Head of the Deputy Minister's Office.
Are you done? My name is Mbulelo Musi, Head of Communication, Department of Military Veterans.
Thank you very much. The honorable member that just got in is Honorable J.J. Skosana. Honorable Skosana, you're welcome. We don't have much on the agenda today, just an introduction of and presentation of the annual performance plan. Department of Military Veterans. I'm now going to ask the Deputy Minister to open for us. The Deputy Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, as you open for us, we must take an advantage of your presence here to inform us about what we pick up in the media about the chiefs of Defense Force being arrested. You must also clarify us, because as we know that you are also the president of the South African National Military Veterans Association, and then also leading the department, what would be the position? Well, the matters are not directly related to government priorities. But as you are here, I think it would be in the benefit of the portfolio committee just to get clarity on those matters. Over to you, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with this one of the that has been in the news from yesterday. The issue is related to the military skills development services members who were on contract for 2 years, and that contract ended in 2012, I think. And the members were informed, I think, around February that their contracts are not going to be renewed. They then decided to take the Department of Defense to court that they want to be employed permanently. And in that court, the state attorney, I think from the department, was not present. And when the decision was taken that they should be employed permanent, the Department then of Defense appealed that matter to say, no, we were not represented, we didn't know about the court, the court date and the court case. The department was not informed. But however, we are prepared to explain to the court why we cannot take this MSTs for permanent employment in the Defense Force. And then the court outcome was that you are giving you the date of the 22nd of July 2014 to come and explain to us why you could not take these people for permanent. But the SANDU, through its own issues with the department, then took that decision of September, the judgment of September, as if it's a contempt of court, that the department did not implement the decision of the court. And on the 1st of July, this thing sat down, and it was judged as a contempt of court. But on the 2nd of July, the Department of Defense and Military Veterans made an urgent application, which was lodged, and then the outcome of that was that that contempt was set aside, which has now granted the Department of Defense that decision of to come on the 22nd of July to come and explain. To that, Chair, going to the military, the Department of Military Veterans, we're here to present our annual performance plan for 2014-2015. But I should raise that, Chair, you know there are challenges present in the Department of Defense and Military Veterans, that the Director General has been put on special leave and the Deputy Director General has been put on leave. We are expecting the outcome of the investigation team from Deloitte and Touch on the 15th of June, and then the end of July, we're expecting that as well, the preliminary report on the 15th. On the end of June, we're expecting the final report. Unfortunately, again, the acting DG was booked off sick, and he came back only on Monday, which was this week on Monday. I've not had an opportunity to meet with him, but subsequent to that, again, Chair, he is busy with the report for the auditors, because he's also the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Defense. But we are hands-on with the minister to make sure that we address. But also, his term as acting DG has came to an end on the 30th of June. But we are taking it upon ourselves with the minister that we make sure that we have a person who will be acting until the report has been finalized. Lastly is that the Chief Financial Officer from the department has been booked, his own sick leave, up until August. So when the report was prepared, he was not present, but they took what he wrote. So some of the things, members are not going to be able to respond to them because they were drafted by him. So we request, with due respect, Chair, that normally we would have said 7 days, but now that has been booked off until August, we are going to try our level best to make sure that where there are questions that we could not, that we cannot ask, we'll make sure that as a matter of agency, whether we'll go to him or we'll request the doctor for him to come and answer some of the questions, so that within a reasonable time, we report back to the Department of Defense. So with those words, may I give then DDG Mabel Rantler to present.
Thank you, DM, Chairperson, Honorable Members. We are here to present our departmental annual plan of action for the year 2014 and 2015. The scope, Honorable Members, of our presentation is such that Part A of the presentation, we look at strategic overview in terms of the department and also in terms of the APP itself. Within that context, we will look at the department's vision and mission, go on to look at our legislative framework in terms of mandate to the Department of Military Veterans, and also limitations of the department that derive from the legislative framework. We will go on to look at our predetermined and executive authority priorities, and finally, with under strategic overview, we will look at the DMV contribution to key national instruments or to realization of goals in our key national instruments. Part B of our presentation is going to look at the three programs, key programs in the Department of Military Veterans. We will also look at sub-programs reporting to the programs. And in that context, we will focus primarily on financial allocations to the department's three programs. We will then look at the allocations, financial allocations per program and also per sub-program to make sure that we see how the money allocated by National Treasury is then, when it gets to DMV, allocated within the department to make sure that we deliver on our mandate. Part C of our program focuses on the core performance information in relation to the work of the Department of Military Veterans. In this section of our APP, we focus on the department's targets, service delivery targets, and related indicators in that context, and we will then conclude in terms of our presentation. As indicated, the aim of this particular presentation, Honorable Members, is to present an overview of the DMV APP for 2014-15, which has already been tabled to Parliament on 12th of March 2014. By way of introduction, Chairperson, we think it is important to indicate that our APP is aligned to the National Treasury Framework for Strategic Planning, the DMV Strategic Plan 2012 to 2016, Government Outcome Priorities, and the National Development Plan, including the FOSAT Plan of Action and also MPET's mandates. We have already indicated the three different key topics under which we are presenting our APP. Just to remind us, honourable members, I see we have among honourable members that were with us throughout last year and keeping us on our toes as a department. We also welcome in that context our new honourable members. But honourable members will remember that our vision is to ensure that we work towards a dignified, unified, empowered, and self-sufficient military veterans community. The mission of our department in that context is to ensure that all activities in the department work towards entrenching the restoration of human dignity of our military veterans, and also to demonstrate appreciation of the nation in terms of the contribution of military veterans to the freedoms that we enjoy today as a country. The legislative requirements for the development of the APP, Chairperson, is that, as is the case with all government programs in our country, the primary legislation that we draw from as a Department of Military Veterans is South Africa's constitution, and within it especially the Bill of Rights. We also, in terms of governance system, draw primarily from the Public Finance Management Act, along with the public service regulations. And as a department, we are then obliged in terms of service delivery to ensure that we advance access by military veterans to their human rights, but also in terms of the PFMA and public service regulation, we are obliged to make sure that we comply with norms and standards, governance norms and standards in that regard. When we looked at our legislative framework, honorable members, we realized that because when you start implementing a program, if you are a new department with a new law, you begin to see gaps in terms of service delivery to the dedicated sector that you are delivering services to. So as we delivered services to military veterans, we realized that the Military Veterans Act has certain gaps that we must go back as a department and look at and begin a process urgently to make amendments that are necessary in terms of strengthening service delivery to military veterans. Just as an example, we looked, for instance, at the issue of housing and observed that where a military veteran is already deceased, and because service benefits delivery in our country to military veterans is 20 years delayed for various reasons, where a military veteran has passed on and left his family homeless, they then have to remain homeless because by law we do not give houses to dependents but only to military veterans themselves. In addition, when you look at healthcare provisioning, it focuses only on the military veteran, which then as head of a family and you are a military veteran, if something happens to you, you can only take care of yourself health-wise. You cannot take care of your dependents. So those are the kinds of things that we are realities that we have come across, and as a department, feeling very strongly that we should go back and make amendments to the Military Veterans Act. We are hoping in that process, Chairperson, honourable members, that you will work with us to ensure that we do indeed enable access by military veterans and their dependents to these legislated benefits. Within that context of revision of legislative mandates, we are going to also look at finalizing key service delivery policies, among which would be public transport support policy for military veterans, the military veterans social relief of distress policy, military veterans pension policy, the heritage policy, including the stakeholder management policy. The Department of Military Veterans, as honorable members will remember, reports to the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans through our Deputy Minister in the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. The department is composed of or led by the accounting officer, our Director General, to whom reports the directorate in the office of the DG and the directorate internal audit. The key functions in terms of service delivery to military veterans in this department are the empowerment and stakeholder management branch, and the socioeconomic support services branch. These two branches are supported in service delivery by our corporate services branch. Under our corporate services branch, the following sub-programs belong: the Chief Directorate for Strategic Support, the Chief Directorate for Financial Management. The department has since moved, when you look under branch Military Veteran Socioeconomic Support Services, there is a chief directorate that is called Research and Policy Development. We realized as a department this is a transversal function and was not appropriate to locate it underneath the socioeconomic support service branch, as it is by design meant to support the entire department. Then that chief directorate has been moved to corporate services, and again an additional chief directorate that has been also established in the Department of Military Veterans is the communications chief directorate under corporate services. The branch empowerment and stakeholder relations has three sub-programs. The chief directorate for heritage, memorials, burials and honors, the chief directorate for military skills development and empowerment, and lastly, the chief directorate for provincial offices and management of stakeholder relations. This leaves a chairperson, the branch socioeconomic support services, with three directorates also. The chief directorate for military healthcare and wellness, the chief directorate for beneficiary support services, and finally, the chief director, for military veteran socioeconomic support services. The department's organogram indicates the team that has to then deliver on the mandate of the department. I should have also indicated, Chairperson, that the Department of Military Veterans also has legislated structures, which are the Advisory Council on Military Veterans, the Military Veterans Appeals Board, and lastly, the Umbrella Association for Military Veterans Organizations. We need to factor it in. We realized that it was an omission on our side to do that. But those three structures, as Chairperson will recall, are meant to support the DMV in terms of service delivery to military veterans, but also to also ensure that they monitor, amongst other things, the work of the Department of Military Delivery on benefits to military veterans, but also because of their specific mandates, the appeals board is provides recourse measures for military veterans who need to be heard in terms of their dissatisfactions around service delivery to themselves, and the advisory council, which is very critical in terms of ensuring that consultations happen in the sector and ensuring that we receive through ministry and also through the department itself from the advisory council inputs that enable us to proceed in terms of policy development and related responsibilities in the department. The team, therefore, that the DMV has and continues to pull together under our organogram has a responsibility to deliver on what we would call predetermined objectives, those objectives being objectives in the APP in line with the department's mandate through the Military Veterans Act. But along with that, we also have executive authority priorities as a department that we have to look at and make certain that we deliver on. Priority one of our executive authority is to ensure that we are a fully functional Department of Military Veterans with an independent budget vote, and our own systems of governance and our own systems for service delivery to our military veterans. We are working hard in that context as a department to ensure that we realize our budget vote and systems. Priority two is provision of social relief of distress to our most vulnerable military veterans. Priority three, to provide comprehensive support services to military veterans and where applicable to dependents. These comprehensive comprehensive support services would include education, training and skills development, healthcare and wellness support, access to healthcare, provisioning of public transport subsidy to our military veterans, housing and burial support. Priority 4 of our executive authority is to promote empowerment programs for military veterans. And in that context, in this year 2014-15, we are looking as a department to focus on facilitation of preferential procurement mechanisms for military veterans through the DMV itself, but also through our social partners within and outside government. We are looking also at operationalizing or activating a special purpose vehicle for our military veterans, because that's important to provide as an incubator for programs designated for military veterans. Primarily, we are talking here about business business structures of our military veterans development in that sense. Facilitation of employment placement opportunities is another area we will be focusing on, and also advise on business starting out and initiating business organizations for military veterans. Our priority 5 in this context is to promote military veterans' heritage as well as memorialization and honoring of our military veterans. In that context, the department this year will be looking at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, restoration of graves of the Liberation War military veterans, establishment of our Heroes Acre. The executive authority also directed that we prioritize strengthening governance and monitoring protocols to give effect to the provisions of the Act. Chairperson will note that I hesitated to say oversight because we don't want to confuse parliamentary portfolio committee oversight with the monitoring that we have to do. The Act also created 4 organs of state. The Act creates 3 organs of state, actually, SANVA as the Umbrella Association, Advisory Council, and the Appeals Board to assist us in terms of, as I indicated earlier on, making sure that we toe the line as a department in terms of delivering on services to military veterans. We also have an audit committee and several other committees within the governance government governance system that a department such as the Department of Military Veterans must also have and put in place. An audit committee is one of those critical structures in any department in our country. Priority 7 is maintenance of a credible and secure national military veterans database. And lastly, to ensure that we implement a high-impact communication and marketing strategy for the department. Chairperson, we know that government is calling on all departments to make sure that the National Development Plan is implemented in our country, and in line with several chapters of the National Development Plan, the DMV had to figure out what exactly we would do in terms of contributing to realization of the goals of the National Development Plan. And in that context, when we studied the National Development Plan as a department, we realized that actually our mandate as a department by nature are such our mandate is such that it automatically and readily supports or contributes to the realization of priorities and aspirations and goals of the National Development Plan. And just to illustrate for an example, when we look at Chapter 8, which is the fourth row in the slide in front of us, when we look at Chapter 8, it speaks about transforming human settlements and the national space economy, integrating and including rural communities in the national economy, human capital, social security, food security, development of human capital, social security, food security, and basic services to communities, looking also at transformation of society and uniting the country. When we look at all these goals and intentions of the NDP, we see how all this readily aligns with what the DMV is doing. In that context, for instance, we see ourselves contributing to realization of the goals of the NDP through benefits provisioning in the areas of housing, in terms of burial support, in terms of pension payout to military veterans. Also, when you look at in terms of promoting social cohesion across society, we see opportunities for us as a department to facilitate involvement of military veterans in nation-building programs in our country. So when we look at the NDP and look at the work of our department, I think we complement each other very well, and we should be able to make meaningful contributions to the realization of the National Development Plan within the military veteran sector. We further, as a department, looked at what the NDP and the contribution of the department, how those relate to government outcome, priority outcomes in our country. And just staying with that row of Chapter 8 in the NDP, we see the similarities, if you wish, or emphasis in terms of the government priority outcome 7, where we are as a country looking to ensure that we have vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities that contribute to food security. And we also see that within the government priorities, outcomes, we are also aspiring for transformation of human settlements. So when we look at all these from page 15, page 16, and page 17, honorable members, this is how we illustrate as a department the linkages, if you wish, between the work of the Department of Military Veterans, the government's priority outcomes, and our National Development Plan goals. And in that sense, we are comfortable as a department that our work indeed works within the context that government has prioritized for this administration moving forward, to say we have as a country to deliver on those priorities. The DMV also has a responsibility, honorable members, to implement the agreements or the plan of the Forum of South Africa's Directors General. The FOSAT has outlined priorities for itself as FOSAT for DGs to make sure that they comply and deliver on certain key priorities for themselves as the Forum of South African Directors General. These priorities are the following: that departments, including our department, have to ensure that our accounting officers performance agreement is signed by our executive authority and is submitted to the Office of the Public Service Commission, or OPSC, as we may choose to call it. We also are expected as a department to develop, secure approval, implement and monitor a service delivery improvement plan for the department and submit to DPSA on time. We are also expected through FOSAT's plan of action to ensure feedback on all cases from the National Anti-Corruption Hotline is provided and all cases are concluded within the stipulated period determined by the Public Service Commission. We are meant to maintain the current, maintain and make sure that our audit, our report comes out as unqualified after audits and to make sure that we sustain that status in terms of our reports. We're meant to ensure that all financial disclosures of our senior managers are concluded, copies are filed with the OPSC, and to make sure that on an annual basis we comply within departments with this particular requirement. We are meant, in terms of foresight also, to ensure that cases of the cases from the presidential hotline that are related to the work of the Department of Military Veterans are resolved. Finally, we are meant to submit, you know, Honorable Chair, that in terms of the National Treasury Instruction Note of November 2011, departments are supposed to pay suppliers for work done within 30 days. And as a department, we are no exception in this case. We must also comply with this particular requirement. So these are the responsibilities related to governance capabilities in our department that the Department of Military Veterans must also comply with towards strengthening of governance work in the department. The DMV must also, in line with governance systems, norms and standards that we must comply with or strive to achieve, must also strive to achieve a number of requirements or standards outlined by the Management Performance Assessment Tool. And in that regard, we are meant to make sure that the integrated DMV strategic management system is operationalized. We are meant to ensure that the evaluation on critical programs of the department are conducted internally. We are meant to ensure that human resources management policies and strategies are developed. That FOSAT implementation plan that I've just gone through is also monitored internally to make sure that we deliver on those mandates. And lastly, we are meant to ensure that we will be completing our responsibilities in terms of NPET and making submissions in that regard in September of this year. That then, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, concludes on our Part A of our presentation, which had to do with the strategic overview. Part B of our presentation, as I indicated, focuses on the programs, the three key programs of the department and related sub-programs. In this section of our presentation, we focus on financial allocations to the department because these financial allocations are primarily what makes it possible for us to deliver on our services, on our mandate, sorry. In terms of program 1, 2, and 3, the allocation of resources derives from the overall allocation, National Treasury allocation to the DMV. For 2014-15, National Treasury allocated 504.2 million rand to the department, which has been split as follows. Program 1 receives 178.2 million of this amount. Program 2 receives 168.1 million rand of that amount. And lastly, Program 3 receives 157.9 million of the 504.2 allocation. When one looks at the allocation, what one picks up, Chairperson, is that the administration program receives a bigger allocation than the two other programs. And this is because we are a new department, as Chairperson knows. We were able last year to establish for ourselves offices to operate from, and to make certain that those offices are ready and equipped for us to provide services for military veterans from those premises. The allocation is meant to ensure that we are able to bring our infrastructure for service delivery to a level that is actually supportive to service delivery. We see, when you look at the allocation for 2016-17 in that context, decrease, because we believe that as we move on as a department, we are going to get into a scenario where the bulk of the money will be going to socioeconomic support services and empowerment as service delivery structures of the Department of Military Veterans. When one looks at this allocation of 504 in terms of the economic classification in line with Treasury's standards, we find that for the entire department, that 504.2 allocation is split into a compensation for employees at 92.2 million, goods and services at 404.1. Within this context of 404, is also located benefits provisioning funds. The payment for capital assets in the department is at 7.9. Of the 504.2 million. Honorable Chair, we look at the financial allocations in terms of individual programs. The following slides, Honorable Members, are meant to then further split the program budgets into sub-programs within the programs. For administration program one, for instance, that allocation of 178.2 million is further split to key sub-programs in program one. In relation to first strategic planning, policy development and monitoring and evaluation at 21 million, management at activities at 7.7 million, corporate services, including supply chain and all the components of corporate services, 51.8 million, financial administration at 16.8 million, internal audit at 8.5 million, office accommodation at 72, because office accommodation goes not only with the securing of office premises, but also everything else that must be put in that building for it to be functional in terms of support services for service delivery. So all these allocations then amount to the total 178.2 allocation for this particular program. When one looks at the 178, Honorable Chair, million in relation to National Treasury's economic classification, we see that 52 million of that amount goes for compensation of employees in this particular program, 117 million to goods and services, and 7.9 million to payment for assets of capital assets of the department. All that then brings us back to 178 million for the program. The allocation for socioeconomic support services, total allocation at 168 million, is further split into allocations for sub-programs as follows. The beneficiaries or database management sub-program receives 13.7 million. The healthcare and wellness program receives 37.1 million. And the socioeconomic support services receive 117.2 million. Brings us back to total of 168.1 million. Similarly, when you look at economic classification in program 2, we see 14.5 going to compensation of employees, goods and services at 153 million, and we do not have payment for capital assets allocated for within this particular program, because payment for capital costs is captured comprehensively for the department under Program 1. So that's what we have. The third program, which is our Empowerment and Stakeholder Management Program, the total allocation for which is 157.9, which is further split into sub-programs as follows. For provincial offices and stakeholder management, 43.3 million. For empowerment and skills development at 100 million. For heritage, memorials, burials and honoring at 14 million, the total of which brings us to 157.9. Similarly, we look at the economic classification of that allocation from National Treasury. We see 25 million going for compensation, 32.7 going for goods and services, which in this case would also include benefits provisioning in line with the Military Veterans Act. And again, this particular service delivery program does not budget for capital assets. It's as capital assets are taken care of within the administrative program 1 allocation. Programs part C of the presentation, honorable members, chairperson, focuses on core performance information of our department in 2014 and 2015. In this context, we are saying in our APP that in 2014-15, we will be providing healthcare services to 7,000 military veterans, providing housing to 1,000 military veterans. We will also be looking at skills development and training for 2,500 military veterans, looking at establishing memorial sites or erecting, memorial sites, two of those in this particular year. But also we will be looking at establishing public-private partnerships public-private partnerships, and we are looking at 10 of those in this particular program. The DMV's performance information in relation to Program 1, when you look at Program 1, Chairperson and Honourable Members, it focuses on governance, compliance, responsibilities of the department. And therefore, looking at these, one sees that within this context, we would also be looking at compliance or delivery on the FOSAT mandates to departments. But all of those then from this page into page 35 are are compliance obligations that all departments must deliver on to ensure that as a South African government, we are working towards good governance systems and ensuring that we are able to account as government on delivery in terms of our different constituencies, but also delivery on the allocation that has been given to our departments through national treasury. We proceed with the DMVs on page 36 with the DMVs performance indicators. And under column, the first column, we see that we are doing healthcare actually in relation to the performance information that we are outlining here at 7. When one looks at this, information that we are presenting in this under in page 36 and page 37, in some instances, Chairperson, you will see that we are actually repeating what we said in an earlier slide. But the purpose of this repetition is to ensure that we provide the information as needed in terms of the high-level indicators, but also in terms of program-based indicators, and this is why you see the relationship between the two looking like we are repeating the same story. Having said all that, Chairperson, we wish in conclusion to indicate and remind ourselves, along with honorable members, that National Treasury actually made its first ever benefits allocation to the Department of Military Veterans only in 2013-2014. However, DMV was not able to access these funds prior to approval of regulations for delivery on the Military Veterans Act. And these regulations were actually only approved and gazetted on the 19th of February 2014. Chairperson, you will remember the toing and froing that happened between the department and National Treasury towards approval of these regulations. The department, therefore, in February this year, was challenged to do the best we can to make sure that we deliver on parts of the APP, 2013-14 APP, within the 2 months that we could, and we did our best in terms of that, but our best was not good enough because there was very little time to spend the money that was then opened for us to access as a department. Therefore, we look at 2014-15 as a department as actually the first year in which the DMV will be implementing our annual performance plan. To some extent without financial constraints. I'm saying without financial constraints because regulations are here, the budget, the allocation is here. This is not to be understood, Chairperson, honorable members, to say the allocation that Treasury made for DMV in 2014-2015 is sufficient in terms of the work that we have to do providing services to military veterans. We will all remember that it is 20 years down the line since military veterans had been waiting for service delivery from government, and therefore the department, based on that reality, is charged with the responsibility to accelerate as best we can service delivery to military veterans. The implication of acceleration, honorable members, is that we need to get concomitant allocation of funds so that we are able to then accelerate. For now, we look at what Treasury has given us. We look at the realities in terms of implementing benefits, and we realize that we can only, with this allocation made, we can only provide services to this number of military veterans, leaving, therefore, a whole number of military veterans out there still yearning and needing support services that to most of them are survival benefits. So we are presenting this to say it is very highly likely that the department would need to go back to Treasury, present to Treasury the implications in terms of the implications of financial allocations in relation to the cost of benefits provisioning, and therefore in relation, and also in relation to acceleration of service delivery to military veterans. We would hope, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, we will be supported by yourselves in that attempt to convince National Treasury that acceleration of service delivery is critical in and it goes along with appropriate allocations for service delivery in this context. In conclusion, finally, Chairperson, Honourable Members, we wish to point that as a department, we observe that the resources that we currently have in our hands, minimal as they are, and the policies that we are pulling together and consolidating as a department are meant to enable the department to contribute meaningfully to moving South Africa forward and to enhancing radical socio-economic transformation within the military veteran sector. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG. It's over to you, Honourable Members. Honourable Sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I'd like to start off with this, a number of questions and issues. Some of them have been explained to some extent, Honourable Chair, and others need further explanation. One is, of course, the issue of the change within the sub-programs. I've read through all the annexures and all the notes. The change of targets, I can understand, because there was no money. Then targets, of course, are shifting, especially now that we have the World Cup, we have the goalposts being shifted all the time. So we do understand and appreciate the lack of money will impact on the targets that have been set. That is appreciated. But what I do have a problem with is that the planning that's supposed to have been going into this department since it was mooted in 2009 and the department was working within the DoD, and I find that with so many changes happening, that the planning that has gone into this department has not been adequate, and therefore we find some serious changes within the sub-programs being amended. So we've seen that the program 1, for instance, changes from 4 to 6. The other one has come down from 4 to 3, and the other one is 3. And, of course, some changes within that. Then there's issues which we... So that is one of the issues I had to worry with. The other one is a fundamental issue to this entire department is the database. The database we have is one that is still not credible, secure, like we want it to be. And the issue is that we got so many complaints coming in every day that members are phoning us and they're not receiving benefits. Now, I've asked the question several times about the CPRs in terms of the definition of the military veteran. All those statutory forces, CPR, should be available. It just needs to be updated. Secondly, all those members that have now signed up again that did not go through the normal MV associations, whether it's the MK, the APLA, ASANLA, whoever, and they feel they've not been registered, has all those things been processed and verified? Because there are a number of them are still waiting. There's issues of appeal, the issue of, and those structures are not yet capacitated within the department to deal with those concerns. The military ombud is still inundated, not fully capacitated, to deal with the issues as well. So we have a serious problem when it comes to the database, and it's a condition. Nobody can receive a benefit unless it's registered on the database. At this moment, the record says we only have 14,000 verified on the database. 14,000 is very little. And the department, of course, has gone ahead, as it should, to issue benefits to people. But we'd like to know the criteria. how it's been done since the regulations were only gazetted officially. There were already payments made and benefits being issued. What criteria was really used for it? Was it in terms of the regulation, because the regulation only passed later? Secondly, who are those beneficiaries? And because the database is incomplete, it creates also tension between military veterans. Some people get and others are not getting. And the way I see the database, it will only be completed in 1617. So people are saying, if it happened now for the past 20 years, nothing happened. Is it really going to happen within the next 3 years? So we have got a great concern that we are creating lots of frustration in the military veteran camp, which we shouldn't be doing, and we should try and allay those issues and deal with it effectively. So the database is a key priority which I feel has not been given the attention it should have been given. It should have been resolved long ago. So that is the one is on the database. The other one is the funded post. This seems to be, the figures are all confusing. I read here, now this is the actual APP signed off by the minister, and the minister says here, the first is the building of the capacity of the department to deliver. In this regard, we have ensured that all vacant posts within the 135 post establishment were filled during 2013-14. Now, I'm not sure, did the minister read all the statistics on this? Because in reality, we only have 67 posts that's been filled. The department claim an additional at 87. The figures speak about 135 that must be filled already by 100%. Then was it up to 169? And there's still additional posts. We have 18 interns and 15 other contract workers also in the system. They are, of course, not included going ahead in the MTF period. The figures are all mixed up. We don't have an exact number of who is actually working, what is outstanding, and therefore this department depends so much on consultants to do the work of officials. And it's totally unacceptable when we have so many unemployment in this country, and speaking in terms of the NDP, and reducing poverty and of course creating jobs and opportunities. This department has so many vacancies. Why have we not given jobs to our people? And I think that is not acceptable that we carry on like this, and there is, of course, a need out there, and there are qualified people to do the job. So the post is a very serious one for me, and the way it's been dealt with the department. That has also been amended in terms of the targets, and I can understand why they amended. But amendment should not take place in an APP that was last year and this year. We should actually deal with it in the annual report and give explanation why it wasn't done. And not change it in an APP which speaks back to 2013-14, where we've made amendments in 2014-15's APP and changed the APP. We can't change the APP of 13-14. You only change it when you report back in the annual report. Leave it as it is. We've made a mistake. Our targets were not right. And therefore, we explain it in the annual report. But we don't change it because there's now a conflict. The issue is very simple, Honourable Chair. If we are budgeting and we're setting targets and we allocate money, what does it say to us about the budgeting process? How credible is the budgeting process? And the money that Treasury has been allocated to this department, has then not been used for the targets set for this department? So I've got a very big concern when it comes to the strategic planning and budgeting process that doesn't really give concern of how serious this matter is and the role of this department in this country. The issue of consultants, I think we just need some explanation about the cost-benefit analysis. Was that done or not done? Secondly, have we gone to the SAMS or MVHBA for the healthcare assessments? Does it have to go? I understand it's important that it's a requirement before they get healthcare. They must have been assessed. But are there any other ways of dealing with it than just affording some other consultants to do the job? The same thing applies to business and advisory services. We've got a number of departments that are doing this currently. DTI is doing it. Economic development is doing it. Provinces are all doing it. Economic development. We have all these red doors and other doors that are open. Are we cooperating as a cooperative governance relation structure with our other blind departments to also serve us, because the military veterans are all over this country, local municipalities, provincial, and all over the country. So we need to make it accessible, and if we have plugged into the cooperative governance, we could actually make it a much cheaper option and include them in those processes. The other one, of course, is laboratory services. I'm not sure what that is about. We need some clarity on it. Then we've got the communication, which is a key priority. And I think here our military veterans are complaining all the time. They are not being informed. They don't get information. There may have been a TV ad once in a while that comes up or for a certain period, but there's no regular communication that is taking place. And in terms of even the annex just added, there's supposed to be pamphlets going out, there's a service charter, there's communication, there's so many other things, but barely we're speaking about. We are not doing our job by keeping our military veterans informed and keeping them satisfied with the progress that's being made in this department. So we're going to have continuous complaints, and if not, protests or strikes. The other one that I'd like to allude to is the issue of, through all the programs, is the travel and subsistence. We need explanation for it. For a small staff of 67, we have a huge amount of monies. And there's catering and entertainment, different categories, three categories of what is staff, what is for this, what is for that. And essentially, military veterans are saying, don't feed us, don't take us by bus, give us and our families an income or something we can live from every day. We don't want an occasional outing. And I think this is very important, that we don't waste money on all the frills, but look at the serious nature, especially of the non-statutory forces that are living in poverty and in squalor and in informal settlements. They are the same people that fought for freedom, but today they totally neglected. And I think we must ignore all the frills and get down to business. So I'm worried about this travel and subsistence, catering and entertainment, that and consumables. There are different categories of consumables. There's also inventory other. Now, when somebody says other, my ears all go up. What is other? And it's a large amount of money in there. Can we have an explanation? If not here, but it can be sent to the committee so that we can appreciate and understand what other actually encompasses. The other one is, of course, rental and hiring of equipment. As we go ahead, we need to furnish offices that I appreciate. It will come from the admin program one, and so there will be an increase. But speaking of the past, when we were only 15 and 29 and then up to 45 members of staff, why was so much money invested into furniture or into equipment? What equipment did they really use? So now we are only rolling out. We're supposed to have had provincial offices already last year. At least one office had to be established. Nothing was done. It's only rolling out now. We have two programs, Honorable Chair, one in admin, the program one, that speaks about office accommodation as one of the sub-programs. Then we go to program three, and we have provincial offices. Now, I'm not sure if we're speaking about two different things, which is 72 million allocated under under program one, and of course for the other program it's half of that. So we have a problem. I don't know exactly if it's duplication or is it something different completely. The other one, of course, is the issue of the stationery and printing. We see lots of that as well for a department that is not too big and with limited staff. The research and policy development sub-program was removed completely, and this is also one of the key priorities in this department. It's in fact the most important sub-program for developing policies, the MOUs, the SLAs, all the research that must be done that will feed information into this particular department, which is entirely dependent on partnerships with so many other line departments, and yet we find that sub-program is just removed. So we don't know, it is submerged somewhere else, but we don't see it as a very important program. So that one is out. The other one is provincial offices. We'd like to know going ahead, what is the rollout, exactly when it's going to be done, and if local government and provincial governments have been contacted or consulted to assist that we do not spend unnecessary money for offices for military veterans. If we have more cooperation between our spheres of government, it means that we have to pay less and we can offer more services to our military veterans and make it more widespread than instead of having one provincial office, because many of our military vets, actually, Honorable Chair, stays in rural areas and they don't have even money to come to town to can make an inquiry or to make an application. So I think the cooperative governance issue, we need to drive it right down to local level to make it accessible to military veterans. The wellness centers, that has also been removed. It's been promised, 10 million has been allocated. The one center is supposed to have been established last year already. It wasn't done. The medal parades, there's a clear indication from the report, from the minister, there will not in future be any honoring, but there will be memorialization and other ways of honoring. Now, this doesn't augur well because this question was posed to the minister and to the DG of the department, Honorable Chair, and it was said that the first medal, three medal parades, which was essentially MK military veterans, 46 million was spent on those three parades, and there was an indication going ahead other non-statutory forces and struggle veterans will be accommodated, like the Apla, Azanla and others, will be accommodated going ahead. And here we see that that will not actually take place and the budget is actually decreased over the MTF period. Burial support has also been removed as one of the targets set, but money was paid out for members last year, and a large amount of money was actually allocated, and there's further monies allocated going ahead. And I think the concern here is this money accessible if people are not yet registered on the database, which means they will die and they won't get any support from this department. And I would like to know if that is the case, that there is, and they don't have to be on the database, but they are registered, they've got a force number, or they got one of the NSF numbers that they acquired via the Military Veterans Associations. So the burial support is a key issue, and I know that's a very important matter in our country, particularly for the people of this country. When they die, it's a very important event in their life and their family life and going back in the history of this country. The MOUs and SLAs, that has also been taken out. It's not being reported on. There's an indication that we've concluded 12 last year, and the report said there was no agreement with any businesses, which means it was with 12 government departments then. Going ahead, we'd like to know the 12 that have been concluded, what is outstanding, and there's an indication that we'll have 10 companies that will come on board that will also have agreements in terms of also rolling out business and opportunities and advice to the military veterans. The RPL and the SAQWA approved certificates was promised to our military veterans last year, and they supposed to have been issued with some certificates and assessments should have been done. That has also been removed. And I'd like to know what has happened in that regard. If we speak about skills transfer, there are those that have skills, that have knowledge and expertise, they need to be assessed and they need to be accredited. And UWC is one of those institutions that is championing that cause of RPL, recognition of prior learning, and to assist the previously disadvantaged. So I think the department needs to work closely with the higher educational institutions and that we give that support to our military veterans. The reduction in employment, I think, I'm not sure the 3% and 3% on what is it actually based. If we say reduction of 3%, then we actually know how many military veterans are actually unemployed and that we created jobs for. At this moment, the database cannot verify that yet, but we have indicated 3%. Similarly, the satisfaction survey, I think that's an in-house arrangement where this department actually assesses that the public is happy with this department. I would question that. It should rather be an independent one and not one that is done by the department. And what is reflected there, if we hear about the dissatisfaction, at this moment, most military veterans are not happy. And therefore, that satisfaction survey cannot be a true reflection of what this department is doing for the military veterans. So I have a question about the satisfaction one. So, Honorable Chair, I think that would be the questions I pose. I may have one or two further questions later. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable
Kamede. Chair, I'm just going to ask for your indulgence. There is one member who did not introduce himself. So I'm going to ask Chair that he introduces himself before I continue with my comments and questions.
Which member is that?
Oh, sure.
My apology, Chair. Firstly, am I recognized?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, thanks, Chair. I don't want to be a spoiled child in the house. My name is Sbu Mncwabe, representing the NFP in this committee. I'm sorry, I've got clashes, so I came late and I'm about to leave. Thank you, Chair.
Representing what?
Representing the National Freedom Party, this committee is. I'm a member of the committee. Thank you.
You must come in time so that you should be counted amongst the lucky. Honorable Gamed.
Thanks, Chair. I could sense that he wanted to leave, so as whip, he had to introduce himself first. Now, Chair, thanks very much. Firstly, I want to thank the department, one, for respecting this committee, just to attend this meeting and bring in the whole team, the whole detachment. That normally doesn't happen with departments. So, Chair, I think on behalf of this committee, we need to thank the department and say, keep it up. Secondly, Chair, English is not my first language. So I make it a point that whatever I read one word by one word. Now, I realized when I was reading here that on the conclusions, I think it was supposed to be something that was to be in the beginning. Because it was a report that was coming to this committee telling us what has happened between 2012 and 2013. And when monies came to this department so that it could function. So due to that, I want us to actually acknowledge that the department had 2 months when it had resources and therefore could not do what it was supposed to do in the other financial year. So be that as it may, I think we should now that the department has got some money, we should now hold it accountable. On the APP that are now for 14-15, now there is no excuse. This I want to stress, that with all the weaknesses, even what my colleague Honorable Isao has said, I think the major catch has been that there were no resources during that financial year. So now I think the games are beginning. The World Cup is not ending. Now we have got the finances, now we can start to work. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kamede. Over to you. But before you answer, maybe this might be our last round, because I've given honorable members enough time. The vacancies that are on your organizational structure, are they filled? The service delivery policies, when do we expect them to be finalized? The on priority aid, the marketing plan, what will it all about? I see the communication part, but what will the marketing plan be all about? As you answer, you must factor that. Thank you.
Just to say, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, we take the advice from Honourable Member that the conclusion should in future be used up front because then it sets the scene for the entire presentation. Thanks for that, Honourable Member. We will make that improvement. Honourable Iso raised very many pertinent questions. The whole team is here, everybody in their areas of operation. So I think my colleagues would be best positioned to look each one at their area of operation and respond accordingly. But just to say before we move into individual responses, Honorable Issa, just to explain that the indicators in the departmental APP are high-level indicators as chosen by the department. But along with that, in sub-programs, in programs and their sub-programs, there are detailed indicators in terms of those allocations of money and to say what exactly will we be doing with that money in that area. So the bulk of the indicators that you do not see in the overall departmental framework will be in the individual programs and sub-programs. Therefore, issues like your burial support will belong there, and the MOUs would also belong there. And when we report as a department on a quarterly basis, we have to report on progress in relation to allocation in those areas. Having said that, I'd like to start with my colleagues right at the end and come this way. Please, everybody, look at your areas and respond. As you do that, I will tick and make sure that there is no question left unanswered. If something falls between the cracks, we will get back to it and make sure that we answer all the questions raised. Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Kondi, can we start?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, the issue of the database is quite central. It's quite central to the department that we cannot respond to the needs of the military veterans if this issue is not sorted out. There are a number of challenges that have been confronted when we're doing the credibility and also making sure that database is secured. I must say there are a number of people now who are interested to become military veterans. People would like to come in and say that they also contributed to the liberation war of this country, I mean to the liberation war that was conducted in this country. Now, when we started with this process of making sure that our database is credible, we were running campaigns in 2012 and 2013. Where we had invited all military veterans to come and register. The response was so interesting because also people who were not invited to come and register, they also responded. You know, we had issued out a list, and in that list, we said these are the military veterans who are expected to come and update their information on the database. It was 57,000. But the response was so enormous that we had 33,000 military veterans who were not part of that 57,000. Now, when we're talking of this 14,000 that is in the database, we're talking of 14,000 that has been processed. But in terms of numbers of military veterans that are in our database, they are close. They are around 88,000 or 90,000, and that process of processing and verifying military veterans, it's ongoing because we're dealing with the dynamic information that changes from time to time. It's not going to stop tomorrow, because also we're expected to make sure that we register the lost and the last military veterans. And we're not expecting, therefore, this project of working on the credibility of the database to stop in 2 years' time to come. This is a project that would maybe take us more or less about 5 years.
And yes, we have the CPR list. We have those CPR lists, and when you are checking also those in those CPR lists, some of the military veterans that are in that CPR list, they are not the military veterans that we are looking for. They are not the bona fide military veterans. We need also need to scrutinize those CPR lists. And we also know that there are military veterans that do not have CPR lists. I mean, we're talking of Azanla. Azanla is not in the CPR list. We also have the Cape Corps. The Cape Corps were not in the CPR list. But where I'm sitting now, we've made a submission that the Cape Corps, that initially they were not defined as military veterans, they should also be included in the military database, because they do qualify, they fit the definition that is being given in the Act. Now, therefore, those numbers, the number that we've given, this to say 14,000, it's increasing, it's going up. That number by now, I think it should be around 20,000. And we'll continue processing and verifying the raw information that we have, and make and we'll make sure that 14,000 it goes up. Then thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thanks. I just want to add on the issue of the database, so that we should understand it. I agree with the sentiments shared by honorable members that we should have a time frame where we should be saying that these are the military veterans that we are having, so that when you budget, you know that you are budgeting on a certain a number. It cannot be an open-ended thing. However, let me give an example. MK submitted a certified personal register of plus minus 34,000. But out of that 34,000, some of them are serving in the Defense Force, or in the police and other institutions. But you have a data that is raw that you receive from the Department of Defense. That is not verified. Other people have passed on. Others might have developed your state that are business people. They don't have interest in these issues of military veterans. But we are saying now that we need to shorten the process of verification. Because if we continue opening it up forever, we're going to have people who want to manipulate this thing and say, I was a military veterans. I think we have a verification panel now that has been established, that is in place. It's going around the provinces. We have spoken to associations themselves, in particular those without force numbers, who are non-statutory force, former armies, to say, this is the number that you submitted. Why do your number is increasing now? Except those who came after the integration, because some of them were studying, doing other things, and they're not many, it's very few. But the problem that you're going to have, Chair, it's your mainly your internally trained people where there was war. We need to deal with them. That's the challenge that we're having, and that's the complaint that you get, that people are not being verified. But we want to deal with those who are not a problem, to say, no, look, we know you were in exile, we'll just put you in the certified personal register. But there are people like your Azanla, which is not yet recognized according to the Act, which we want to start with them. And according to our understanding, the number that they presented prior integration, because they never wanted to be part of the integration processes, it was plus minus 3,000, which we said we want to consider a status APLA deal with it, and once and for all, we say, no, the data of APLA, I mean not APLA, Azanla MVA is clear. Equally so with the issue of APLA MVA, where in the ministerial task team, they submitted that
all of their members have been integrated, whether you're the self-defense units or what. So we are trying to close all the loopholes, Chair, that are coming up now, including some of our people that, you know, I'm taking chances because they're military veterans. But we want to make sure that by the end of this year, at least, we should have dealt with some of the things. But next year, we should be having a clean data. If there are openings, it must not be as huge. Because if we leave it open-ended, we'll continue having problems. But we'll be going around the provinces now, up to your municipalities, where you get your military veterans. And we hope with that the issue of complaints of not registration will come to an end. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Chairperson, honorable members, mine will be on two issues, the planning and budgeting processes, also the utilization of CETA in terms of our IT infrastructure. And I would like us to look at this in relation to the first priority, which talks to a fully functional department with its own systems. I need to maybe foreground my explanation by saying we will recall that the department is an organic growth from the Department of Defense that is using its own legacy systems, your OACs, your PERSOL, you name them. But this department's mandate find expression in the economic and social sector, which then requires that the systems that must be used are systems that are used across those organs of state that actually are mandated to provide those services. And as such, it became prudent that this department then develop the necessary legal instruments with the CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, to ensure then that it migrates to the transversal systems. Included in that also are systems to ensure interoperability across the various organs of state. Also, in the spirit of intergovernmental relations across the spheres of government to ensure that we provide services closer to military veterans. This then is the reason behind the planning of the utilization of some funding, which was argued during the MTEC processes with Treasury for utilization during the 2014 fiscal year to make sure that the IT infrastructure makes services closer to military veterans. But I want to underscore that this is done within the umbrella of utilizing the State Information Agency, which is having the legal mandate to deliver on that. There are various elements of this that actually have been used as baseline to arrive at that amount. I must hasten also to indicate that part of that is also then the development of a virtualized information collecting system. And this, as the honorable member would remember, it then calls for what we call data sheets, which become to articulate in real terms the type of indicators that you have to use. I must first thank the committee for assisting us in the process, but also go further to say, yes, we are not allowed to change in terms of the annual performance plan. That is correct. We also need to factor those as part of reporting. However, for trend analysis, it is important that we remember that we had a strategic plan 2012 to 2016. And as we move, we need to make sure then that the indicators is appearing there and is appearing in the subsequent APPs. There is a trend on what has happened to enable researchers to perform their task easily. Finally, I also want to indicate that, as the committee is aware, though we've received the allocation from Treasury, And though the allocation was based on specific values that were put in the CAP memo, the reality has been that the amount provided vis-a-vis the needs out there to military veterans is actually not congruent. And so, as such, when the allocation was done, it was then important to make sure then that during the 2013 process, the chiefs in the various programs relook the actual targets, which is what they are supposed to do to inform them forward planning. And that is why then we are very transparent in terms of what has happened for research purposes, and also to talk about then the stringent requirements that emanate from the targets. Finally, I want to say, going forward, the department is sharpening again its capability to link strategic planning and strategic budgeting so as to ensure then that there is cleaner plans, and the lower level targets that belong to branch APPs remain there. But the strategic indicators then be the ones that are actually in the public plan, as defense would say. I would want to leave it there for now, Chairperson.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, mine is going to be a response on the issue of healthcare access through private practitioners, particularly the MVHPA and SAMHSA that has been named in the House so far, which seems to suggest that the DMV is actually offering or prioritizing private sector practitioners to give them a business to take care of military veterans. The other point that I'm going to respond to is the issue of these laboratory services, what exactly that issue is. With all due respect, honorable members, we all should appreciate the fact that the South African healthcare government is overburdened insofar as delivery of healthcare services to its own population. That being said, looking into the fact that military veterans have been forever waiting to receive services from the department, which amongst those benefits, the legislated one is the health care. We cannot begin to take military veterans and subject them to the queuing for them to be able to receive their health care services. Also, that is why we have our Minister of Health calling for the National Health Care Insurance, because it does appreciate the fact that there is an overburdening of the resources that should be shared between the public and the private sector. As a result, the Department of Military Veterans, through its service partner, the South African Military Healthcare Services, in this particular case, the issue that was raised of doing the healthcare assessments, which are critical for us to be able to plan for our healthcare services, as well as for us to refer to our military veterans appropriately based on their healthcare profile. The reason that this service has been given to those service partners, as you might be aware that historically from 2010, even before we had the means to give services to military veterans, there was that ministerial directive for SAMHSA to assist the military veterans department to give healthcare services to our military veterans. When we were planning to conduct this healthcare assessment for military veterans, particularly because we realized that military veterans are calling for healthcare services when they are already too sick and they don't even know where to go and how to go, we decided to embark on an initiative of saying that let's go to our people and inform them as to how they are going to get the service, empower them by issuing the healthcare cards, and at that point in time, make sure that we get the disease profile of our military veterans so that we can refer them accordingly, and as well as for us to be able to plan moving forward. It is in that context that we actually embarked on the services of the Military Veteran Healthcare Practitioner Association, which we have a memorandum of understanding which is as a department. And also it is based on the fact that we did, at the initiation of the program, contact SAMHSA, which was our service provider at that point in time that has been used by the department so far. But they did, in writing, alluded to the fact that they cannot be able to carry that capacity for them to assist us in making sure that we get this program across. That is the reason why we ended up with our service partner, the Military Veterans Healthcare Practitioner Association, which, Honourable Member, the outcomes of that service cannot be ever measured monetary, because out of that exercise of military veterans that we did with the MVHPA, out of that 4.5 something military veterans that were assessed, we found that about 48% of military veterans were had chronic conditions and they didn't even know they were diagnosed for the first time from that initiative. Out of that exercise, we had quite a large number of military veterans who, because of the age and because of their chronic conditions, were not able to, they had vision problems. And those military veterans, based on that exercise of them being screened, they were given appropriate care. We had military veterans that were deaf, that were injured, that had no eardrums. They were identified through that program, and those military veterans were referred accordingly for secondary management of healthcare. So in short, this initiative is actually calling and rising to our Department of Health initiative of entrenching the public-private partnerships. And we are doing that being mindful of the cost implications and being mindful of the number of military veterans that we still have to give services to. Going to the second one of the laboratory services, this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is just an issue of classification, which according to National Treasury, they've grouped all the services that are relating to the program of healthcare according to this, because there was no specific classification for that. So the money that we are looking at, that budget that is estimated there, is the budget of issues that are relating to the provision of the general healthcare to military veterans. Thank you.
Just a minute, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Just to add on the partnership. You see, we have military veterans. Let me give an example. A person from Ngungunluf who cannot have access to a military hospital. So normally what the department does is to stabilize them. They have an agreement with other general practitioners for them to go there until they are transferred to your military hospital, up to whether your 2 mil or your one military hospital.
Sorry, Honourable Chair, just to also add on the point that Deputy Minister has put on the table. This actually speaks to the issue of access as defined in our healthcare, whereby we are saying that healthcare services in a certain environment, in rural areas, your healthcare service, when you say that it's accessible, it shouldn't be beyond 70 kilometer radius. And in urban areas, it shouldn't be beyond 20 kilometer radius. As a result, we are bound by that to make sure that, because we understand the resources of the military veterans, they don't have money for taxes, they don't have money for anything. And over and above the fact that the very same SAMHSA healthcare facilities primarily are geared to give healthcare services to the military men in service. Therefore, they become overstretched in terms of taking care of another, making sure that they make other resources available for the military veterans. In that regard, then we establish a network of service providers, credible service providers, which are recognized by the law, which are in good standing to serve our military veterans, so that we have a network of saying that in area A, we've got Dr. So-and-so in that place, in this area, we've got Dr. So-and-so in this place, and then they feed into the secondary and tertiary healthcare level for military veterans. But at primary healthcare level, they must be within the environment within which our military veterans reside. Thank you.
This is my last time as chair now, so I'll give you and then hand it over to the chair.
All right, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will respond on honors. I will state that it's not true that we are doing away with honors.
and replacing honours with memorialization. Memorialization and honours are programs which goes hand in hand. We are currently busy with the policy on memorialization, as we've done honours, and we are going still to continue with honours. So they are programs which go hand in hand. So the other one doesn't replace the other. And on burial support, I want to state that we've never turned away any member who have applied for burial support. What we do, we check and verify with a military veterans association which they belong to, and also check with pensions, the treasury. Most of them, we do get them in treasury. They do get benefits. We even top up on what the treasury pays out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kamete. I appoint you to be a chairperson. When you leave the chair, you disappoint yourself. Don't wait for me. So I see you also appoint me. I'll disappoint myself. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks, Chair, on your reappointment. Chair, mine would be to deal with communication, marketing, and to some degree public perception survey. Firstly, I must indicate that I think we are humbled, and I think we welcome the observation that we need to beef up communication. We say this having noticed that I think partly to some degree without necessarily being making excuses. Indeed, the issue of lack of resources was to a great degree a hamstring. But I think that that's history sort of that the bridge. We've made our determination. The deputy minister, the minister have said we must now move with speed in all areas of work, including communication. So that we've taken as a commitment as a department. But we didn't commit just vaguely. What we did was to say that last year after the gazetting, we started a program that told us that at least we are in the step in the right direction. We started a campaign on television, as correctly Sue would have observed. We started a campaign in newspapers. We started a campaign in our website was actually set up. We started a process of setting up a call center. We've put systems and processes and plans in place. The consequence of that is exactly what my colleagues have been saying. The number of military veterans who have come now to start to access the department and its services has increased even fivefold, I can say, which our research will tell us. So it's not an accident of history. It's because at least some steps are beginning to make military veterans know what to find, where, and how. So there is some progress. But however, there's a lot that's to be done, and we've taken the challenge. So what we've done is that we've developed a comprehensive integrated communication strategy as a framework. That strategy we are discussing with the Deputy Minister and the Minister this coming week, it is already there, it's quantified, it has costed. Just shed light before we come and present it formally as a signed document so that you are able to understand that there's thinking in it and the methodology seems to be quite developmental and apparently it's going to assist, help your concerns, which I think are legitimate. Member is. Our approach has been premised on the fact that the macro policy of government on communication is that it must be developmental and it should have certain elements in it. One is to ensure that we have direct communication rather than communicating through media, because the assumption that's made is that not all South Africans, especially our military veterans community, have got access to the mass media. Many don't have television, many don't have radios, many can't even afford to buy newspapers daily. So we are emphasizing our strategic approach to this communication drive to say we are going to be talking to military veterans directly through in these shows, you know, those shows where we talk to them. And the plan speaks to that. The second area of direct communication is through military veterans associations. We've got SANVA now since it was reconstituted, and I think it was a milestone as well in improving our communication. When SANVA was reconstituted last year,
it became an arm for us to reach out to military veterans. And I can say without any fear of contradiction, the 8 associations in Sanva are beginning to help us a lot to reach out to military veterans, to share with them on the benefits, to share with them a range of things. If you can make it, perhaps sometimes your time in the constituency work you do, you'll find that it is beginning to help even the Western Cape. I do recall that when we met with the Cape Coloured Corps and others, they said they're beginning to get more information. However, this is far from the desired state and it's work in progress. The third area that is developmental in our approach is with regard to ensuring that we communicate in the language that's easy to understand. We have unfortunately have had a situation where we've been more English-based. Now, many would speak Zulu, many would speak Shangaan. That's an area that we're thinking now we need to begin to work around it. We are engaging with the Government Communication and Information Service to see whether through that national footprint they can help us language diversify. And they have in principle agreed that we can sign a memorandum of understanding that can ensure that our language is simple, it's easy to understand. That's another area of making sure that we reach out to our target audiences in a manner that's understandable and easy to comprehend. Another area then outside of the developmental thrust is about diversification of our communication platforms. We're still going to continue to have campaigns. We're going to continue to have roadshows. In fact, in our state plan with the Deputy Minister, one of the first things we want to request is that we move around with him in the country for him to go and begin to articulate the vision. But one of the areas will be also about making sure we have direct understanding of what military veterans' communication needs are. So it will be two-pronged. To inform them of what we intend to do in terms of the vision for this year and the EPP, but even more importantly, to hear them what they want. Because sometimes what we found, which then takes us to a research-based approach to communication. Last year, we came to diagnose that we thought maybe we are communicating, but we need to take a step back and see, is our communicating effective? Is it really meeting the information and service needs of military veterans? We have engaged our newly established research units to do a diagnostic sort of analysis of, is our communication thrust really dealing with empirical needs of veterans? Is it the right appropriate? Is it the messaging, is it appropriate? And fortunately, GCIS is helping us on that. We want to complete that process before the end of the second quarter, so that third and fourth quarter, we ramp up our communication with scientific base of understanding the communication thrust we need to undertake. In addition to putting research as a basis of our communication approach so that we can measure ourselves whether we're making high impact or not, we also are utilizing other platforms. We've joined the social media space. We're in the Facebook now. We're on YouTube. We're in the through our website. Thirdly, we're trying to be modern. I'm far from being modern. I'm already old. But we're trying to move into that space, and we've got, fortunately, I can say now that as part of beefing up our capacity, just as late as 2 weeks ago, we employed children of military veterans. We've got 5 who are manning the call center who are able to understand and sensitively treat, and we've told them, without any fear of contradiction, do not delay responding to military veterans. And fortunately, I'm getting positive vibes. Military veterans are saying, hey, now people are really responding to us. So that's an attempt to move in that direction of being sensitive and caring. The second aspect besides the call center is the issue of, we've taken also 5 last week. No, the other one started in April. The other one started last week. Those the contract workers, also military veteran children. Because we're very sensitive to the fact that it must be people who understand these military veterans. It shouldn't be like we recruit based on academic papers and qualifications only. They're important. But the important thing is people will empathize, people will have compassion, people will be able to relate to these military veterans because they are a unique species that requires specific understanding of their needs. I can say without any fear of contradiction, in the meeting I held yesterday with them, they told us that they're bringing in, despite the fact that they're bringing these human elements, some are communicators who are in journalism, some are communicators who are in PR, some are communicators in advertising. So inadvertently, we have imported what we didn't have as requisite skills that are going to take us to another level of ramping up our communication. So from a skills and capacity base in next year, we want to challenge this community to watch the space. The last point then one want to indicate is the fact that we also are looking at marketing that the chairperson is looking at. We are very clear now that in addition to building the brand, which was important for people to understand, there's a department called DMV, which is meant with a specific mandate and purpose. We are going to market more the benefits that military veterans ought to get. There's a team on publications which specializes now in building leaflets which are going to be translated. What is the benefit on burial? What is the benefit on all these 11 benefits? So that team is going to be beginning to say, when you go to road shows, we will have a leaflet that is in English, and if we're in KZN, translated to Zulu. If we are going to KZN, to Eastern Cape, it's a leaflet that is in English, translated to Xhosa, so that we diversify language. I'm convinced now that with the plan we have, with the approach we are taking that is developmental, and with the assistance of Military Veterans Associations and SANVA, as well as, I want to implore, the constituency work that will assist us to do, it can only but be better for communication and marketing of our programs. Thank you very much. On the public survey, I indicated to my colleague that the research unit is also going to be there, just to lay a foundation. We've met with them because you would have understood that they are a newly established entity within the department, the research and policy unit. We then agreed with them that one of the things we need to do urgently is to commission a public survey sort of program that will partly be looking at public perceptions in terms of what are the thinking of the military veterans themselves about us as a department, so that we don't think and then blow our own trumpets when in reality we're not speaking necessarily to what they are expecting. The second part being to also begin to understand objectively what their actual needs are. So I'm giving them a brief, and we met as late as last, in fact, when was it? 2 days ago. To seek a way in which we can have a brief that says as soon as possible, and already they've given me a questionnaire, which I'm filling now, so that they were acting with a sense of urgency. We want to undertake that. I think what I welcome in your suggestion is the fact that you are suggesting that it should be as independent as possible. That's where we want to migrate it to, so that we don't, where we have blind spots, we can see them. But he'll talk to it in terms of the actual specialization on the approach. But on course, I think great minds think alike, so we're not off what we're thinking. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to all the members who are present. Honourable Iso, the number of questions that you have raised, as far as our work goes, it raises our appreciation levels, because sometimes you might look and think that you are spot on, and then something is brought to mind that makes you revert and relook at your planning. So it's absolutely appreciated, because it does keep us hooked into our plans and what we need to deliver. I'm going to tackle quite a number of the questions that come up, and one of the ones that I'm looking at is that of the catering and the entertainment, as well as the travel and subsistence. Now, you'll find out that because we engage with the military veterans on an ongoing basis, and the ongoing basis involves where, for example, we had a meeting here in the Western Cape about a month ago with the SACC. There were about 500 military veterans who attended that particular gathering. For those type of events, the funding does come from the Department of Military Veterans. It's facilitated through requests that come via SANVA, so that we have a record of correspondence in that particular regard. And so you'll find out that there are various workshops that are held. Mbulelo has mentioned structures such as your CMVO and others who are assisting us in marketing certain elements such as the regulation. CMVO has taken that upon themselves, and almost every weekend for the past month and going forward, they are out there working within their constituency, and for those visits, It's part of the SANBA process, and therefore they make requests to us, and we fund much of the travel that's related to SANBA's work and its focus. So yes, we do acknowledge that when one looks at the travel and accommodation and the catering and entertainment, it does look very high, but it is related to servicing the military veterans directly. Recently, when we engaged out in the Standerton area, we were provided with an opportunity for 101 jobs for military veterans on the dams in the Mpumalanga area. It required us to transport close to 120 military veterans, where we sat them down, took them through a whole orientation process together with the Department of Water Affairs. We had the two deputy ministers, the then Deputy Minister Makwetla, together with the then Deputy Minister Mabuda Fatsi, who were part of the process. So we needed to have them together on site, engaging with the local community in Standerton, viewing the job site, going through an interview process. So we transport them, and that's the cost, once again related to SANBA. So yes, the cost does appear to be high, but all of our traveling and the catering and entertainment is listed as such out of your E&E classifications. So it's not catering only related to feeding people, but where the catering in the broad classification requires us to hire a venue for a workshop and that type of thing. That's where the catering comes in. And we must admit, Honorable and all the other members, that in terms of how our nomenclature is captured in terms of the classifications, we also need to do a further declassification so that what clearly stands up is where it's operational, catering, travel and subsistence, and where it's related to dealing directly with military veterans. It is a shortcoming, we do acknowledge that, and we do need to raise it to the level where it can be absolutely clear where it's related to service delivery, etc. And so that is something that is absolutely imperative, and we have had a discussion with our CFO in making sure that in our reporting we lift that so that it's factored in. Something else that you'd find in here, Honorable Isao, is that if you had to, what we haven't moved towards is even creating a defined budget responsibility code, etc., for the SANBA costing. So you'll find out that it fits within here. And so within that shortcoming, those are the some of the things as our systems become more finer, fine-tuned. We need to capture that so that when you read the document, the reports, it stands out very clearly. So yes, those are the shortcomings. And it clusters both operational and service-based traveling and subsistence, and we need to make sure that that happens and that we start pulling that apart. So I trust that it's a broad response to the travel and subsistence and the catering, but highlighting where the shortcoming is, and that takes it across the department in that sense. I want to quickly hop over and talk to provincial offices. And within the provincial offices, we've appointed people into all the provinces. We have a provincial coordinator. We have an assistant provincial coordinator appointed in every province. At the moment, they are deployed into the provinces. And as the deputy minister correctly says, from the office of the executive authority, together with us, we've been engaging with municipalities, with the premier's offices, and we are now engaging with public works as well. We're trying to make sure that holistically we engage to begin sourcing office space for our provincial staff, and we at different levels of success. In the Northwest, for example, our office there is seated in the Premier's office, and that came out of correspondence to the Premier's office, and they gave us office space there. In KZN, we had an offer At one point, also in the Mgungundlovu, Peter Maritzburg area, and then there was a discussion around centralizing it more down in Durban. So it's also looking at which are the most feasible access points so that it creates less travel for the military veterans. And reading forward as we project forward, we're at the level where we have established the appointment of people into provincial offices. But there's the scope to create the 51 additional posts, which we've discussed in looking at our organizational diagram going forward, and that is to begin to staff regions so that military veterans travel less and less to get services. So the 51 regional offices are already under discussion. And in each one of these, there's a very strong move to make sure that we appoint military veterans. Our current staffing of provincial officers, both the deputy director and assistant, all 18 of them are military veterans. So there is also a deliberate skew, checking on their qualifications, but a very strong drive to make sure that as far as possible we do appoint military veterans into the process. So there is collaboration with our municipalities. Last week we even attended the SALGA conference that was held in the Eastern Cape for two reasons. One of them, to listen to what the SALGA plan and process is, but also to foreground our needs and need for collaboration with the municipal structures. So we look at all opportunities to engage so that we do target, because ultimately the envelope isn't too big, and we want to make sure that at the end of the day, whatever facilities we access are accessed at the best cost value, so that it doesn't negate what we pay out for military veterans and therefore their benefits at the end of the day. Mr. Feni has already spoken to the medals, parades, etc. Honorable Iso, you spoke about us having engaged with the MK military veterans. We do have already we had set aside, we've got the designs in place, we've submitted, it's a commitment process at the moment for the honoring of APLA founding fathers. We had that in place. However, our main challenge that pertains at the moment is that from the political side, there's the challenge with APLA, and one would note that after the SANBA conference in September, the second wing of APLA was one of those who was part of the parties that launched a court battle against the department on the status of the department. So you're finding out that when you're looking at the APLA process, it's not well settled. In MK, we've managed because there's unity, there's cohesion, and we were able to go through the awards process. It's not the same in this, but definitely the commitment is already there, medals designed, procured. We've even had discussions with both sides of APLA, but it's sitting them down and saying, guys, the point of convergence and agreement so that we can deliver. However, whilst I say that, it's not stopping us from delivering to a military veteran. When you take away the nomenclature, APLA, MK, Azandla, we still service a military veteran. So if he comes in without his badge, he's looking for whatever support, we do service him. It's when they come under the badge of an association that sometimes it can be dicey, especially with the court case, but nonetheless, our mandate is to deal with military veterans, and we continue to do that under all situations. With burial support, we do admit that it might have slipped in that the targets might not be really visible, but I'm sure that one of the things that we could do is to present a database of the number of people who we've serviced, the number of families who we've serviced for the past financial year. It was up to 100, and the cost is close to R1 million in that case. For the forthcoming financial year, we're envisaging that if we get a similar number of requests, which was about 100, because of the increase, which is promulgated through the regulations, we need to double that because it's now 25,000 instead of the 10,000 rand. But as Mr. Feni correctly says, we've picked up in some instances where military veterans were not on the database. There was one who passed on in Mpumalanga. Yes, we did not pay monies by the time the funeral happened, but we carried the process. The value of the CPR is that we were able then, when a veteran is not listed on the database, we walk back even into the CPR list. And if we're able to trace them on the CPR, that's our first point of verification. Then we make a formal submission for the DG's approval to lift them onto the database, all in collaboration with the unit that deals with that. And in both instances where people were not on the database, but we had traced them through the CPR, we have been able to pay the families the money retrospectively. So you'll find that the bulk of the funerals do happen on a retrospective payment basis. And we, as correctly as Mbulelo says, now that there's been some advocacy, you're finding out that some people are calling and saying, 2 years ago, someone passed on in my family. We are making the determination that pre the burial support policy, which is November 2011, we don't have any basis for providing any benefit. But those who've come on board and who passed on within the time of the promulgation of the burial support policy, which we are revising now, we are providing payment, and the database is there to show where we've made a payment for burial support to who has come on board and submitted for that particular request. So the fund is there, it is accessible, and definitely on the database for accessing that particular support. The other structures that are in place is our appeals board, not in place, but the process has happened. Our advertising, and I picked this up, sir, because you raised the military ombuds and General Matanzima's office, which is under pressure, and we are engaging and talking to each other because it's our military veterans who go and engage there. So the appeals board process is en route. We've got the databases, the feedback from the adverts that went out, and it's currently in the office of the DG, understanding the context of the leave of absence of the DG and the other DDG. The acting DG has committed himself to signing what is on in his watch and matters that came up before, so that's our engagement with the executive authority to fast track these processes, but that is moving to make sure that we have those structures in place as quickly as possible. Very recently, 2 days ago, we even had a meeting with SAPS where one of the things that has come up when we engage with PRASA is that some military veterans are being prevented from getting jobs or being registered in as peace officers through the security industry because of criminal records. So we've now started engaging with SAPS, and we've agreed that we're going to launch a project, and we my deputy director is working on that, and we'll present that into the into EXCO Executive Authority as well, so that it gets buy-in. And if the Executive Authority determines that it comes before portfolio, we will do that. The good thing about this is that it can help military veterans who have served their sentences and have gone beyond the 10 years. We can now start assisting them to get expunging of those sentences. They've explained the process. We're going into a memorandum of agreement so that we do it jointly, and we are working on the target that we want to see based on the length of time that's from the start of the process to the end. So we see that it will help our military veterans in many instances, because sometimes it's only at the point of death that we find out that there's a dishonorable discharge, or for those who are alive, the criminal records that prevent them from accessing benefit. However, we don't pass the crime on to the beneficiary. So if the beneficiary wishes to access such as bursaries in schooling, despite the parent having the criminal sentence, they still access. So we don't pass that on, as long as there's a database process and verification to that, that still goes on, because we are compelled through that process. What is happening with the business development and the DTI? We've had a number of meetings recently, and this also relates, sir, to the fact that at the time, the initial presentation of the APP in March, we only had a staffing of about 5, but the process for staffing the branch had started. And I can report now that in including our provincial coordinators and others, our branch is now staffed at 30 towards the 45, and we already have processes in place. Within the next 2 months, we should be at least at 35 staff in the branch. So that it will help us, and so it is beginning to see momentum being gained, and I'm saying this because out of that there's much stronger interaction with the DTI. Together we're putting a rollout plan for registration of cooperatives in line with what the regulations guide us to do in terms of business development and support. And DTI has offered to come on board, and we really are looking at going big in that particular rollout, and that we'll also have as part of our discussions. We haven't yet engaged with communication because we haven't tightened the plan yet, but as soon as that comes in, it will feature as part of our advocacy, so that our military veterans become aware of it. We're still getting many walk-ins, and in line with what is raised as what is the satisfaction survey, yes, we could talk a lot on the self-reporting element, particularly because in our Hatfield offices, we're still getting many people who are the walk-ins. Some are even traveling from KZN and other areas for services, but we gradually are letting them know that we do have people in provinces. We're providing them with contact details of the provincial coordinators, and that is why we're trying to ensure that those physical infrastructure offices are identified quickly, and the CAM unit at Public Works is very important. We're engaging with them so that we can quickly identify even Public Works state-owned space that we could utilize. There's even looking at the decommissioned military sites that we could explore so that we can get physical space for our military veterans as quickly as possible. The one thing that Honorable Iso mentions is that military veterans want money in the pocket, which is true. And we're trying as far as possible to get that to be the case. However, when we find these workshops, etc., that happens, we're not able to give them money in the pocket, but we are able to bring them together to those functions. And that is where the funding comes in, to make sure that we bring them on board and that they are part of those events, and that we feed them with the information that is required. With regard to Memoranda of Understanding and SLAs, we do have a number of Memoranda and Understanding. We are under discussion with municipalities at the moment in the Gauteng area, but it's gradually beginning to pick up. And with our provincial offices now being in place, we now have people on the ground in the areas, and they are able to engage even at that close level. The RPL, I do note, and we're talking to the RPL again, and we're going into different meetings. My team is engaging. We have the University of Stellenbosch as one port of entry with Dr. Kutsia for the one part. Yes, the University of the Western Cape is another port of call. And there we definitely do see the need for ensuring that we do the RPL and bring them on board. One of the the limiting factors that looms. It's not there at the moment, but it's a looming limiting factor possibly, is that in many instances the cost of going through an RPL exercise is sometimes more expensive than actually going into a program and stuff. For example, if you go into a learnership process, there is sometimes a bit of a prohibitive cost there, but we don't want that to limit us. We visited a university in Port Alfred. They have their home in Amsterdam. It's the University of the Stenden University, and they've got some very interesting programs. And it was brought to us by Sanva in the Eastern Cape. And so they invited us out, they did a presentation. Their cost is definitely much more. So what we need to do is look at a deviation because of the cost factor, but the benefit to that higher cost factor is that they were very clear and said, we're not interested in volume. We don't want to do 200 people and train for unemployment. They're willing to do 20 people that they will then ensure us right at the outset that there is a job opportunity for the veteran. So it's that cost benefit that we look at as well. And those are the number of areas that we're looking at. And so, Honorable, I'm trusting that I've touched on a number of the questions and areas that you've raised in that response, but I'm certain, like as we've done before, if there's an area that's missing, the committee secretariat would note it, and we could then provide a written response for consumption as well. Thank you, sir.
Our time is up by 30 minutes. That if there are any questions that you did not respond to, please respond in a written form to honorable members. Wrapping up, I'll say that I have not heard any of the honorable members saying that your presentation does not meet the basic requirement of addressing government priorities. The national, the treasury regulation, national development plan, and the other documents. What I heard is that honorable members appreciated your presentation and also pointed out shortcomings. Now, what you should do is go and clean your document. This is not the first interaction with you. And we'll continue interacting with you in future. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
We all left our backpacks.